You know, there's a similarity here between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and it's that while other people swirl around them and worry about conflicts, the candidates themselves seem to be unconcerned. Now, political conflicts of interest are also a factor in a Trump presidency. His holdings include residential buildings and hotels and golf courses all around the world. There are foreign investors and foreign co-owners of businesses Trump invests in. A recent New York Times investigation found that his businesses have an estimated $650 million in business debt, some of it to the largest bank in China. Now, Donald Trump says his children would run his operations if he becomes president. Robert Kellner is a partner at Covington and Burling and is chair of the Election and Political Law Practice Group. He advises corporations and presidential political appointees on compliance and ethical issues. Robert Kellner, welcome.
Thank you very much, Todd.
What would a candidate in Donald Trump's position normally do? What's appropriate here ethically if he were to become president?
Traditionally, presidents have placed their assets, their wealth, in a blind trust. So if they had stocks or mutual funds, all of that would be dumped into a bank account over which they had no control, and they would appoint somebody else to handle their investments.
Now, does that work in this case? Because it can be dumped into a blind account, but Donald Trump, President Trump, would still know that he has business ties to China, that he has business ties to Russian investors. There's no way for him to forget that.
That's right. It's really very difficult to see how a blind trust would work for Donald Trump or for anybody like Donald Trump, because much of his wealth is locked up in golf courses, in commercial office buildings, and you can't put that in a bank account. So the whole concept of the blind trust really doesn't work for Donald Trump, even if he has his family take over his operations. He's still, of course, going to know that the family wealth is largely invested in real estate and golf courses, and actions he takes as president might affect those things.
And that, at the very least, we should say, is an appearance of conflict of interest, not an implication that a President Trump would take actions necessarily to benefit solely himself. But I guess the point here, Robert Kellner, is that the rules are different for presidents, right? There are strict rules for cabinet secretaries and people like that who you advised. But in reality, for Donald Trump, nor for that matter for Hillary Clinton, they don't have to do anything, right? This is all voluntary ethics.
That's right, Todd. I mean, interestingly, the federal conflicts of interest statute that does apply to cabinet secretaries, it applies to all the many government officials that the president appoints, that statute actually does not apply to the president of the United States for a very good reason, which is that under the U.S. Constitution, it's unlikely that Congress could ever pass a statute that would restrict the powers of the president as spelled out in the Constitution. So for a cabinet secretary, we can say, you have a conflict of interest, you're going to have to recuse yourself from a particular decision or a particular matter, or you'll have to divest yourself of certain assets. But the president has a constitutional responsibility to make decisions. He can't constitutionally recuse himself from any matter at all. And that's why the financial conflicts of interest statute just doesn't apply to the president of the United States.
So why is appearance of conflict of interest then so important here? I mean, if it's the case that Donald Trump's supporters don't really care whether he has foreign business interests or owes this $650 million in business debt, if they're sort of okay with it, why is the appearance of conflict still important?
Frankly, I'm not sure that it is. I mean, I think the entire American electorate understands very well by this point that Donald Trump is a wealthy man to one degree or another, and that he's got all sorts of financial assets, and those are going to present issues for him if he's elected president. But the voters will presumably take that account when they go into the election booth and may decide that that's not as important to them as many other things. And I think that the key thing is that you want to be sure that voters have sufficient information to make that judgment. And that's why there's been some criticism of the financial disclosure process, which is something that presidential candidates have to go through. Both Trump and Hillary Clinton have had to disclose their financial interest to some degree. And some people have said that the disclosures are not sufficiently detailed so that voters would fully understand what financial obligations and commitments Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have.
So that when Donald Trump disclosed something between 20 million and 50 million or up to 50 million, if it was 650 million, well, that form just doesn't capture it.
That's right. And in particular, the financial disclosure form really doesn't tell us very much about loans that he may have from individuals in the U.S. or overseas. So we have a rough image of his wealth and how he's invested, but it's only a rough impression.
Robert Kellner is a partner at Covington and Burling in Washington, D.C. He's election and political law practice group head there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.